Welcome to the Maintenance Mavericks podcast, where we talk about trends in maintenance, reliability, and asset operations. My name is Ryan. I'm the CEO and founder of Upkeep, and I'll be your host for today. For today's guest, I'm excited to welcome Bill Byther to our podcast. Bill is the CEO and founder of Machine Metrics, which is an industrial IoT platform for machines. He started the company 9 years ago to help transform analytics into action for the modern manufacturer and was previously the founder and CEO of Italisoft Software. Welcome to the podcast, Bill. How are you doing today?
Thanks for having me, Ryan. I'm really excited to be here and excited to see what we can bring to your listeners.
So the way that I always kick the podcast off, Bill, is, you know, have you share a little bit more about how you're first introduced to this industry of maintenance, manufacturing, IoT? What has your journey been like getting you to where you are today?
Oof, how much time do we have, Ryan? I'll try to keep it a bit short. I started my career as a mechanical engineer in aerospace, and always liked working with things. I restored a Mustang of my dad, so I always liked physical things, and manufacturing was part of that. I'm a self-taught programmer, and decided that after working in United Technologies for a while on some fuel controls for like the F-35, I wanted to go out on my own as an entrepreneur. And my first handful of years bootstrapping my company, Italisoft, that you mentioned, was not in manufacturing or in IoT in any way, but it sort of gave me the tools to know how to start and grow a company. And then after I sold that, I really wanted to get back into my roots. And my neighbor was a owner of a machine shop, and I had been talking to him throughout the years about his experiences and his challenges, and decided that I wanted to get back to my roots in in this case aerospace. I was more on the design side, not the manufacturing side. But really wanted to solve a bigger problem for the industry. Yeah, I could probably wrap that up sort of there, but that's what kind of got me into manufacturing is just as I started Machine Metrics, really with the idea that there's a lot of data that's being captured from machines that isn't being used and really in a good way to improve efficiency. It just sits there in its own silo. So I created Machine Metrics to solve that problem, to make it easy to capture data from machines, and then use that to not only to improve the operation of the machine, but also to connect your other factory systems, like the engineering processes with production and maintenance operations.
What an awesome journey, Bill. And I've kind of known you for many years too, and been able to see your journey, and it's been awesome seeing all the progress that you've made and all the new releases and innovation that you and the team have made. It's been absolutely incredible. Since you are kind of like the master in data, industrial IoT, I wanted to take this podcast to really pick your brain about the future of industrial IoT and data and how it has reshaped maintenance and reliability and how it will reshape maintenance and reliability in the industrial sector over the next 5-10 years from now. How has industrial IoT really reshaped, and how is it reshaping the entire industry right now?
Yeah, so I mean, traditionally, as you know, maintenance really is about keeping your machines running. And if you look traditionally at how you manage that, it was primarily based on either an operator or a technician that would realize that the machine was down, and they would go basically figure out how to fix it. So tools like Upkeep and other CMMS systems come out to really help manage those workflows, so that you could really get from the start to the end of a maintenance task efficiently. With IoT, you have more data that you can use. So it isn't just based on, machine is down, go fix it. You can start to really look at the data that the machines are capturing, and in real time, be able to trigger these events. So what you're seeing now is that you have event-based data that's driving these work orders from these machine connections that can help take you from through a preventive maintenance schedule that might be calendar-based. Maybe you change the lubricant every month, to you're looking at how much time the machine is running, similar to say you're changing oil in a car, you're going based on mileage, not on not on time, really. Driving that even further to be based on events. So you have certain faults that occur. You know, your car engine light will go on. You know, that requires maintenance. Well, there's all these different machines, but if the machine has a particular faults, that could really should be triggering a maintenance activity. So that's what we're seeing today. And then taking it a bit further, you can start to, you know, the whole predictive maintenance, something that, you know, everyone's been talking about for really decades now, but it's been really difficult in manufacturing, in particular in discrete manufacturing, to really leverage predictive maintenance, to really understand what's happening in the future. We're really just starting to crack that. It's there's still a lot to do there. We'll consider that still a future endeavor that that's going to take some more AI, more innovation to really say that we've gotten there completely.
Yeah, maybe on that note, I mean, we've been talking about, you know, industrial IoT, I feel like for, you know, decades now, but it feels like progress has also been a little bit slow too. Maybe the question here, Bill, is like, what are some of the biggest challenges when it comes to implementing this like connected analytics, IoT in a manufacturing process? Well, you know, is it me that just feels like it's slow, or has it actually been slow?
It really has been slow, Ryan. And the reason is due to the complexity, you know, all the different assets that are used in manufacturing. If you have like one line, for example, say a process manufacturing plant, you might know what each of the components are in that line. It never changes. And in those cases, we've had, say, we've gone all the way to predictive maintenance a little bit faster. There's companies out there that have done a really good job with like continuous rotating machinery, you know, predicting pumps and compressors, and you know, really predicting their failures. But you know, a lot of manufacturing is even more complicated than that. You have various machines for different tasks. You have robotics. You have you know, changeovers happening all the time, and it's really difficult to understand how to get data from all these different various assets, but then also what to do with that data. And a lot of these IoT projects get stuck just on capturing the data and being able to make sense of the data across your various assets. So that's really effectively the reason why this is taking so long, is because, you know, we're just starting to see vendors like Machine Metrics that is making it easy to, you know, to connect to your all the variety of assets that you have on your shop floor. And that's really step one.
Yeah. I mean, I commonly hear that too, is like step one, gather data. And that's a huge endeavor. You have to invest all this time and money and, you know, CapEx as well in building out these programs just to capture data. But oftentimes, I think to your point, what do you do with the data? You kind of don't know until you have it. So maybe on that note, like, what do you tell companies that are thinking about, you know, jumping into this IoT world when the clear value may not be found until after you capture data, run an analysis?
What we're seeing across manufacturing is that some of the we'll call it upper mid market or large manufacturers, they tend to start building their own software around this. And like, hey, I know my machines, you know, let's figure out how to get data from it. You know, here's this library that'll help me. You know, so an example would be like a 100 different machine assets, right? So, you know, let's start to capture data from a handful of them, right? And then that could take, you know, a year or maybe more to do that. And then it's about like what to do with that data. And that can be even more challenging, right? Because, you know, it's not just about, like you said, it's not just about capturing it. It's that you need to leverage that really to, you know, drive productivity, to increase or improve your machine uptime. And, you know, that takes, you know, really my recommendation is that you really need to work with domain experts that have done this before. You know, that's where, you know, companies like us come to the table, because, you know, we're doing this across hundreds of, you know, of companies, and really have built the, you know, the expertise, the software, the analytics to, you know, help our customers identify, hey, which machine should I really be focusing my attention on that can actually make a difference with, you know, what's the, you know, the OEE or utilization of that machine, and actually give you the reasons, the core components of, you know, why that machine is not performing, and finally, it's really the instructions to, you know, to help, you know, guide the user into like what things should you be doing differently, being more prescriptive. So those are the things that you need to do, what is what I call the analytics journey, to really receive that full value. And it's hard. You know, it's hard. It takes a lot of time. We've been at this for, you know, going on a decade now, and you know, we're still improving every day. So it's not not an easy thing.
Yeah. I mean, is there like a cheat sheet here? Like, you know, what are the most common, you know, inefficiencies that you oftentimes find, you know, for our listeners to kind of like double click into? Is there like some sort of cheat sheet that you know, our listeners can you know, look into today?
Well, that's I would say that, you know, the thing about manufacturing is that while there's commonalities, you know, every manufacturer can be so different. There's a common metric that you hear a lot, OEE, right? So, you know, OEE is that metric. It really composes of the three core components, you know, that really you can help you drill down. So availability, you know, when your machine is supposed to be running, how much is it running? Performance, how fast is it running compared to what it could run at? And then quality, you know, how many, you know, good pieces that are you producing compared to all the pieces that you're making? And that by knowing that, it kind of helps you drill down a little bit further. So you know where to focus. A lot of times it's going to be on the uptime availability, because you see machines going down, you know, for, you know, unplanned reasons all the time, right? Whether it's, you know, the operator isn't there when the machine needs attention, and, you know, there's a staffing issue, or there's a failure on a machine that might take a week to fix. There's a lot of reasons why a machine might go down. And that's generally the, you know, the driver for OEE, at least the, you know, the where you'd want to spend most of your attention.
Yeah. I mean, what you're describing actually is, you know, a common theme that we talk about here at Upkeep, which is, you know, this intersection between maintenance and operations, reliability, the impact of, you know, that operators actually have on uptime of equipment, you know, and the ability to properly maintain reliable equipment through operators is actually a very real impact. You know, I want to maybe pick your brain a little bit too, Bill. Like, where do you see this intersection between, you know, maintenance and operators and operations in, you know, improving uptime, reducing downtime?
What I'm seeing, especially across the more innovative factories, is there's more and more automation, right? So you're seeing more robotics. I was actually just at a plant in Canada the other day, and there was they had AGVs that were so autonomous vehicles that were like literally going to their stock room to grab material and replacing or adding bars to their lathes, and going to their tool room and replacing tools on their CNC machines. Not common to see that, but, you know, in that particular plant, the people that were operating that plant were highly skilled workers that have been operators for a while, but they understand how to keep the machines running. They understand, you know, how to keep the robots going. And you're seeing, you know, more operators that are really crossing over into maintenance, or where their focus is really to keep the systems running. And that's where, you know, I think we're starting to see a, you know, conversion between, you know, operators and maintenance technicians. It's interesting. It's interesting to see that the skill sets are becoming, you know, that are needed are definitely much higher, either through just experience or through, you know, education, engineering. That's where, well, the other issue that I know we haven't touched on yet, but you know, some of the bigger challenges that you see in the industry.
Yeah, I mean, just random anecdote here, a little bit off topic, but I was talking to one of our customers who their company just invested, you know, tens of millions of dollars into these autonomous vehicles, same point. And the whole reasoning behind it was because it was so difficult to just get people to actually drive these trucks. I mean, as a mining company, it was very, very difficult because they had a big labor shortage. So they invested tens of millions of dollars into these autonomous vehicles. They said, okay, cool. Like, now that we have these autonomous vehicles, we need fewer people, fewer drivers. But, you know, it basically kind of backfired on them a little bit, because what wound up happening was they had more sophisticated equipment, more sophisticated assets. And these sophisticated assets now required a higher skill level of people to manage and maintain these. So they kind of traded, you know, they traded the operators for higher skill. Granted, it was lower quantity, but higher skilled maintenance technicians to actually, you know, maintain, fix, and, you know, manage these autonomous vehicles. I think something similar to what you just described too.
Yeah, I mean, you could take two approaches here, right? You could, you know, build that recruiting engine that continues to bring in, operators, and they're still skilled workers, right? To operate the machines. But what we're seeing is, to really remain competitive, you need to continue to push innovation. And that's where, say, these AGVs come into play. But this might have been your experience. If you don't have the right people to program those AGVs and, you know, keep them up and running, you're going to have problems, and that's going to be a bad investment. So you really have to be committed for that type of automation to really work. And you need the data to support it too, right? So if you don't have all of your systems talking and communicating, you know, that type of automation just isn't going to work.
Let's talk security and privacy, because that's been a big challenge for a lot of companies to really adopt, the industrial IoT. Like, how do you see some companies addressing these concerns around security, privacy in this world where, you know, you've got like AI and, you know, these takeovers and malware happening? I feel like something in the news every single day.
Yeah, so I think what you really need to look at is the trust in the companies that you're working with. So make sure that your software company has the right compliance certificates for, you know, the ISO, SOC, CMMC, and the other thing is, you know, a lot of times the attention is more on, well, say, what data is going to the cloud, and not enough on sort of internal resources, networking, and, you know, updating your operating systems. And, you know, the worst security breaches that we've seen have been, you know, just the, like, there was a famous Stuxnet one where, you know, there was USB keys that were thrown in the parking lot, and somebody came in, took the USB key, put it into your computer, spread the malware. So that's not, you know, because of, you know, a third-party software system that was used. It's because that your internal IT network and systems weren't up to date and secure. So that's where a lot of attention needs to be, focused. You know, whereas that you do need to make sure that the vendors that you use, you know, are trustworthy and have the right compliance, and you understand where your data is going, you know, who all the processors are of that data. That's something that, you know, we have, you know, people, and we have our compliance certificates to make sure that you can have that trust in, you know, in us, and of course, you know, other vendors that are also at play.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. You can be so locked down, but then, you know, if we don't have the right personnel, kind of the training programs in place, like, doesn't matter what kind of, you know, firewalls you have, if someone picks up that USB, plugs it into their computer, it's actually a personnel training issue, actually. You know, you and I have been kind of working on, you know, our companies have seen so much progress over the last 10 years in this industry. And if we take a step back and think about what the industry looks like in 10 years, another 10 years from now, Bill, mm-hmm. what do you envision?
Well, I mean, I think more of the example that I gave earlier, where you have factories that have more autonomous operations. So, you know, I mean, that example is pretty rare in our industry right now. And even in this case, it was one sort of factory of the future plant amongst, you know, all the other plants. I think that really what I expect to see is, there's a few things. One, I think there's going to be less of the sort of monolith software applications. Like, it isn't just about investing in, you know, a single system, like, you know, say SAP. It's going to be really choosing, you know, a few best of breed systems that connect, and that you don't have these data silos. You're going to take out that manual data entry. There's still so much of that in our industry, Brian, where, yeah, you have administrative staff or operators that are typing stuff in from one system to another system, and that just has to go away. And if we do our jobs right, there's going to be you know, that when you need human interaction, it's only going to be when absolutely necessary. And it's going to be, you know, very much very prescriptive, right? So it's more about like, where does this frontline worker need to be? You know, what do they need to do? That's going to really help, help drive efficiency. And where you can use things like, robotics and autonomous vehicles, you're going to see a lot more of that. So really, just to summarize, it's, you know, connecting all of your data silos, you know, automatically taking out that human data input, using automation when you can. And then if not, because there's always going to be people, there's always going to be, you know, human hands assembling, and especially for these, smaller sizes of lower volume, high mix, provide those prescriptions and instructions to the people to be more efficient.
I'm excited about the next 10 years, Bill. Kind of seen glimpses of it through our customers, eyes, and it's really, really cool seeing more and more lights out manufacturing, more advanced robotics. You know, obviously ChatGPT right now is blowing up, and there's a lot of really interesting use cases for AI in the industrial setting. So I'm just really, really excited to see what the future holds for us, and really appreciate you sharing all of your.
Yeah, I mean, I would touch on that a little bit more. I kind of purposely left that out because, you know, AI is getting a lot of attention right now, you know, in particular generative AI, you know, ChatGPT. And, you know, it's still not really mature for manufacturing type use cases where you're going to see some of the near term benefits from that are more conversational instructions. And, you know, these are models that, that are really using language, to improve communication. And that's, in manufacturing, we're making parts and pieces, and there's a lot more to it. So I do think that we're going to see innovation in the next 10 years in AI, but we have a long ways to go for that to be applied in manufacturing the way that some people are envisioning. And you never know, it could come sooner than I think, but we're not quite there yet where AI is really driving a huge amount of progress. It's very specific use cases right now.
Maybe to counter that a little bit, like if you had asked me about AI, you know, even a year ago, I'd be like, oh yeah, you know, the thing's coming, but it's decades away. But with the release of ChatGPT, I kind of saw how fast things could turn. And so I don't know, I'm a little bit of a... I was originally a skeptic. I think I'm a little bit more of a like, oh, wow, this could actually happen much, much sooner than I think. But I don't know exactly what that is.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the right transformers for our industry. Right now it's language communication. So, you know, if that happens really fast, then, you know, then I could be wrong. And, you know, maybe we'll be sitting here in 3 years and wow, okay, this is really making a big impact. We're certainly looking at it and keeping an eye on it. We will leverage, you know, whatever technology is being developed. But, you know, we're not an AI first company. Like, we're not developing these, these massive algorithms. We'll leave that to the OpenAI and Hugging Face and all those other companies that are spending billions on it.
You know, the one that I actually can't fully understand at all right now is, you know, the Apple Vision Pro and, you know, the AR and VR and the promises that will, like, you know, help support training in the industrial sector. Like, I personally, I think it's a little bit ridiculous to be like, all right, hey, yeah, you can do all your training, you know, at home with these like AR, VR glasses. And I think it's very ridiculous to be like, you do that at home, but then we still need you to like come into work and turn wrenches. Like, I think that one I can't understand.
Yeah, I think, again, there's like very specific use cases where that can be helpful. I mean, we've seen in manufacturing, you know, they've consumerized AR, VR. But, I think, you know, when you're trying to repair some remote system somewhere and, you know, in the your maintenance person doesn't have all the right information, and can you, you know, communicate better with AR, VR? I think that you can, but, I don't know when we're going to see that in sort of our everyday manufacturing workforce, whether that makes sense. Yeah. I don't know. I guess I wouldn't consider myself that much of a futurist but I suppose, like we've seen with ChatGPT, these things can sometimes go faster than we think, but not right now. And, Yeah, we'll have to see.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Even if I'm proven wrong too.
Yeah. No, but I'm kind of on your side, but I read your article just earlier today, so I kind of agree with you. It's a little hard for me to imagine, putting these glasses on and interacting every day with, in that way. But, we'll see what their newer generations think.
Well, thank you so much, Bill. The way that we always end our podcast is with a quick fire set of questions that leave our audience with a few extra golden nuggets of information. So basically, I'll ask you a quick short question. Get your thoughts in 20 seconds or less. You ready to jump in?
Let's do it.
To start, biggest challenge our industry has right now, and how do you think we're doing as a collective group to address it?
I would say that staffing, hiring skilled workers pretty much across the board. I don't think that any of us are doing a great job allowing younger generations to see the promise and the excitement and how modern manufacturing can really be. So we have some work to do there, but I see that as the biggest challenge.
All right. One question you wished I had asked you, and how would you have answered?
Well, you never asked me what I do outside of work in machine metrics. So I would say that I love to trail run and cross country ski with my Huskies. It's one of the things that I do when I can.
All right. Contrarian views. One thing about your job or field that you believe many others would disagree with you on.
I think I touched on this before, but seeing that there's going to be a handful of really vertically integrated software systems that connect sort of a best of breed factory stack, is a contrarian view. I think there's a lot out there that really see that this is going to be, ultimately it's going to come down to, a big company, SAP, Oracle, Microsoft, that really is the, is a single vendor for manufacturing. I just don't think that's true. I think there's too much opportunity, and it's, startups can move really fast and create really great products. So I think that's going to be, really the stack that we see in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Biggest takeaway you hope all of our listeners will learn from today's discussion.
I think really just it's really worth investing in your infrastructure and your, really getting the right, getting data, leveraging data for value, connecting your systems. The impacts can be pretty significant. And, I'd love that to be a takeaway that, that your listeners have.
All right. All right. Last question. Can you share with all of our listeners the different ways they can connect with you and follow you and your journey, Bill?
Yeah, so you can connect with me on LinkedIn, Bill Beither on LinkedIn, or email bill.beither@machinemetrics.com. Not super active on other social vehicles or mediums, but connect with me there.
All right. Thank you again, Bill, for joining us. And thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in today's episode of the Maintenance Mavericks podcast. Again, my name is Ryan. I'm the CEO and founder of Upkeep, and you can also connect with me. I'm very active on LinkedIn. Shoot me an email, ryan@upkeep.com. I really hope you all enjoyed today's episode, and I look forward to the next one. Until next time, thanks again, Bill. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you, Ryan.